It is a holy thing that we do today. This holy thing we do through the conduit of liturgy. What is liturgy but the prescribed, very sometimes complex rituals and ceremonies of the church? Now, there are many Christian traditions throughout the world, countless traditions that love Jesus, that teach Jesus, that know Jesus, that use no liturgy at all. But for us as Anglicans, for Roman Catholic brothers and sisters, for Lutheran Orthodox, and for many others who call ourselves liturgical, we ask the question, what does liturgy do for us, and what does liturgy expect of us? Well, to be sure, liturgy is a drama. It tells a story. We did that at the very beginning of the Mass today, in the liturgy of the palm ceremony. We stood outside and took the blessed palms. We made a procession inside, reminiscent, reenacting, if you will, the last procession that Jesus made into Jerusalem. The only time in his life that he allowed kingly homage to be paid for him as people placed the palm branches before his path. But liturgy is more than just mere play acting. There is also, in addition to a historical plane, telling us the stories of long ago, deep embedded in the strata of liturgy is a plane of grace. And in this plane of grace, there's a mysticism. And the mysticism does an amazing thing. It takes the reality of what happened long ago, and it makes it real for us now. The most obvious example is the liturgy that we celebrate every Sunday. We call the Divine Liturgy, the Eucharist. Yes, on a historical plane, remember the upper room and the story of the Last Supper. But on a plane of grace, we actually believe, we boldly believe that the very presence of Christ that was there 2,000 years ago in that upper room becomes real for us. Here at Mass, it's not mere symbolism or remembrance. That is an audacious, that is a bold belief. We call that the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. And so, today, as we begin Holy Week, we begin the pinnacle of the Church's liturgies. And Palm Sunday is the golden doorway to Holy Week. And I would like just to pause and ask you for one last time just to hold your palm up just for a moment. Okay. These palms are our invitation to the ancient liturgies of Holy Week. And they are blessed. And we are to take them home with the assurance that divine grace and blessing will rest wherever they are placed. And they're to be brought back in less than a year from now. And to be burned on Shrove Tuesday to make the palm ash for next year's Ash Wednesday to begin the liturgical cycle all over again. And I'd like to repeat something I say at every Palm Sunday sermon, and that is that these invitations to the ancient liturgies are physical invitations. The invitation is to bring our feet and our bodies to the liturgies because there's a spiritual phenomenon about that. Where our feet go, our souls follow. Much of Christianity is a physical discipline. To bring our feet to the liturgy, to bring our eyes to the scripture, to bring our tongue to the Eucharist. And our souls follow. And though at the end of Holy Week our feet and bodies may be weary, our souls are porous, and they will soar. They will be nourished and fed. And that is the promise of Holy Week. And I ask you to consider coming to the liturgy, but also reading about them before coming. We do that before we go to an opera, do we not? To a play, or sometimes to hear a speech. How much more so before the most important liturgies of the year? And remember, there's no shame. There's no shame in Wikipedia. Just a few moments will give back a hundredfold. But what I would like to do for the remainder of this sermon today, it's just a little bit longer, but this liturgy is probably the longest of the year anyway, is to skim through, just touch upon the history of each day of Holy Week. What is it that they mean? And remember that they're layered with meaning, almost in an unmeasured way. So today is just a touch of them. But first, Palm Sunday, again, the doorway to Holy Week. We begin Palm Sunday with the palm ceremony that we already discussed, on a historical plane reenacting that first procession. But on a plane of grace, what did we do? what we do with all that almost awkward movement in the beginning. See, those who accompanied Jesus on his last journey to Jerusalem, just as the Passover lambs in the days of the Exodus were taken to the house of Israel, the Passover lamb comes to the house of Israel in Jerusalem. The people accompanied him in that last journey. And that intimacy of that accompanying became real for us walking into this church. That on the plane of grace. It is a sacred thing to accompany someone, is it not? To their death, to an important court date, to a surgery. We can't bear the burden ourselves. But there's something humanly amazing about what it is to accompany someone during difficult moments. And that's what happened on the plane of grace walking into the church today. And then always on Palm Sunday, the Passion is said or chanted because it foreshadows the events of the coming week. And then after the Passion and the sermon, the tone and the tenor of the Palm Sunday liturgy takes a dramatic turn. The tunes of the hymns, everything becomes more serious and somber, again, as you step into the doorway of Holy Week. And yet, as they become more somber and serious, nevertheless, we celebrate the Holy Eucharist. Why is that? Because all through Holy Week, we stand on this side of the resurrection, unlike the disciples. During Jesus' day, we're always on this side of the resurrection, looking at the story. Even on Good Friday, contemplating his death, we're looking through the lens of the resurrection even then. As a little kid, I remember staying up late, sometimes sneaking to where my parents were looking at TV, and they shouldn't have, but they let me do it. And often there was some scary movie on. And I thought for sure that the good people were going to lose. They're going to be done in. My father said, no, they're not. They're fine. How do you know they're fine? He would always say, because it's in the script. It's in the script. Well, we know the script. We come to these difficult days of Holy Week from this side of the resurrection. And then we leave Palm Sunday. And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of Holy Week are not much unlike other days of the season of Lent. But they are to be days of preparation, to do our errands, to clean our houses, to prepare our food, to do all that we can do to clear up the sacred days of Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, called the sacred triduum. And so on Thursday evening, I think at 6:30, we come, and lo and behold, on a historical plane, the altar is adorned in white. We haven't seen that since before Ash Wednesday, because it will represent the upper room, where Jesus gave the last gift before he died to his disciples, giving them the gift of the Eucharist, where he instituted the Lord's Supper. And that we'll be celebrating. We'll actually sing that night the Gloria, which we haven't done since before Holy Week. But after the Gloria on Monday, Thursday, there's a tremendous liturgical change. The bells are no longer rung until the Gloria at the Vigil of Easter to replace the bells. And this is to emphasize the change in tone. We have the clapper. And then, what did Jesus do during the Eucharist, after the Eucharist? He washed his disciples' feet. So on a historical plane, we reenact Jesus washing the disciples' feet. Volunteers come forward to sit on the bench to have the priest wash their feet. Now, let me say that this scares off many people from the liturgy of Maundy Thursday. It is a voluntary thing. Not everyone is called to have their feet washed. We also need a congregation. And also find that people have their feet washed when it's spiritually time for them to do so. So come and accompany those, at least, that do have their feet washed. Come and live in the tension of that awkwardness, because it was awkward for the disciples, was it not, to have the disciples wash their feet. And then on the plane of grace, what happens? The very intimacy, the humility, and the beauty of the love of Jesus is not just remembered. It becomes real for us at that liturgy. Again, we celebrate the Eucharist. And then what did Jesus do following the Last Supper? He took his most trusted disciples, Peter, James, and John, and he went to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. And this was his most dire hour. One gospel said he was so scared he sweated blood drops, praying for the cup to pass. And remember, he took Peter, James, and John, and he kept falling asleep, and it hurt Jesus. He was human too. He needed to be accompanied. He said, could you not stay awake 1 hour? So Monday, Thursday, we take the presence of Jesus in the bread, and only one kind in bread. And we bring it to the altar in the family chapel. We call the altar repose. We have white flowers to represent the garden. And the church will be open all night long for us to come and stay for 1 hour to do for Jesus what Peter, James, and John could not do. There's a sign-up sheet in the back. Even if someone's name is written, write your name next to it to accompany them. Wouldn't it be beautiful if the chapel was full for all the night? It will change our life to give an hour in the middle of the night to do for Jesus this beautiful thing. And then on Maundy Thursday, it's a complicated liturgy, but so beautiful. We do one last thing. We have to prepare the altar for the next day, for Good Friday. For on a historical plane, it won't represent the upper room on Good Friday, but the slab of sacrifice. And while the choir sings the haunting Psalm 22, the lights are dimmed, and the servers and the priests strip the altar of its beauty, of its color, of its ornaments. And the very last thing on the marble altar is it is washed with water and wine. And 30 coins are dropped upon the marble, representing the coins given to Judas for the betrayal of Jesus. And we lay in silence. And then the next day at noon, we come to Good Friday. And Good Friday liturgy is unlike any other. It's the one time that it gives us emotional permission for quietude, for some pauses. A rare thing in our culture. We sing the solemn collect, and we have what is called the veneration of the cross, where this cross hanging right there is unveiled. And one by one, the congregation comes up to venerate it. And some choose just to stand before it, maybe bow and leave. Others will touch or kiss or hold, whatever is their custom. But we venerate that cross. And then we go and make a procession, bringing the presence of Jesus to the Garden of Gethsemane back. And we have the communion. Not a celebration of the Mass. We simply give away the reserved sacrament. Because Jesus, all of Jesus, must be spent. It is the one day that the tabernacle must be empty. And some of you will receive maybe 2 or 3 wafers that day, because it must all be consumed. And then we end by singing the hymn, "Were you there when they crucified my Lord?" And on a plane of grace, we will be able to say with all authenticity, "I am there. I'm there." And then our feet will be weary by this time. On Saturday evening at 7 o'clock, it's a bit later because it needs to be dark, and it won't be dark because of daylight saving time and Easter is late, but we'll catch the spirit of that. We come and we stand again in the garden as we did today, and we light the small fire, representing the spark of the resurrection, the love that always overtakes darkness. We light the paschal candle, and we come and everyone holds their candles, and in time, light is in the paschal candle, the glow of light in the darkness. And in the midst of that glow, we read stories from the Old Testament, stories of salvation. It's like a grandmother coming to say, look at the photo album. Look at the story of your family. And the mother church says, look at the story of the love of God, how He saved you and saved you over and over again. The creation? That's why the eyes of the valley of dry bones, walking through the Red Sea. It's long. Your candles, it's going to take some effort. But by the end of that, the lights go up, and we celebrate the first celebration, the first Mass of Easter. And in the context of the first Mass, with the opening acclamation about the resurrection, we baptize Silas, who is here today. I think he's in Sunday school. He's here every Sunday. He needs you here. He needs his village. He needs his church with him. It is the most significant day of baptism for all the days of the year. And then we begin the 50-day celebration of Easter. And whether we feel it or not, no matter our spiritual condition, we give thanks for the change and the love and the promises of the resurrection. How do we know to do that? How do we know that they're true? How do we know that we're worthy? Well, my brothers and sisters, it's in the script. It's in the script. Amen.